Tuesday, September 3rd. Welcome on into Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Shirley Min.
Nice to see you, Shirley.
Thanks for having me, filling in for Avi.
Wonderful. So we got a big show today. You get to come in right after Labor Day, which kind of tees up today's show.
Yeah, absolutely. So appropriate. We're talking job hunting.
Mm.
And it's a big subject right now. What is it like in the job market right now? I know I have no idea.
Yeah,
I
haven't been in the game in to look for a job without networking, because a lot of our jobs now are networked.
Mm-hmm.
Jobs, yeah.
But this is a whole new world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've been looking for a new job, we kind of want to know about your experience. And also on the other side, hiring managers, we want to hear from you. You know, what makes an application stand out? What can job seekers do to kind of get their resume seen and win you over? Call 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, and we have experts. We already have some folks who've left voicemails with their experiences. So we'd love to hear from you, 888-477-9499. So we have our trio of news stories.
Yeah.
Which we do every day. Yeah, they're good ones today. So Shirley, you may have heard about or even seen a bus stop ad that shows presidential candidate Kamala Harris in Kelly Green. And the ad claims that she is the, quote, official candidate of the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, that ad, despite looking official, did not come from the Eagles or the Harris campaign. It's a fake.
It looks so official.
It did. It looked really good. And I heard about it when a Philadelphia influencer tweeted a pic of them next to the ad at a bus stop. And of course, the ads have the Birds logo, all those things, and it sends people to a real website. Well, the Eagles posted on X that they were aware of these counterfeit political ads that are being circulated, and they're working with their ad partner to get them removed. SEPTA and the city, clueless who's behind it. The city says somebody broke into the ad spaces and put up the posters.
Oh my gosh. And I think the city is treating these as incidents of vandalism, but it's so wild. It's the real Eagles logo.
Yeah. And a real website.
And
that
a real website.
That takes you to voter information, although no candidate is listed.
Right. Yeah. So if you want to take a look at them for yourself, the posters have been spotted at 16th and Spring Garden, 18th and JFK, and 34th and Walnut.
So. By the way, rumors have been circulating, though, that this is the work of an artist named Winston Singh, who also did posters tying Biden to Ben and Jerry's and also Trump to Ex-Lax. Now, you could probably check him out on Instagram, but he has some very interesting posters. He is usually a political commentary. He's spoken out against fast food and all sorts of other things as well. But those are just rumors, unverified rumors. There.
Okay. Well, our next talker here is not junk food, mm-hmm. but junk fees.
Ooh.
And here's what I mean. Parents in New Jersey are getting hit with fees on their child's school lunch money account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's what's happening. Schools in New Jersey and around the country, they no longer accept cash from students paying for lunch in the cafeterias. And so families have to pay into online accounts that deduct money for each meal. And you can load that money with a credit card, but it comes with a convenience fee,
ooh.
Which is entirely inconvenient for families because some parents have told NJ.com that those fees ranged from 4% to 16%.
Mm.
And I have some personal experience with
this. Break it down.
My kid's school also charges me this convenience fee. I'm at 14%. So I will load $20 into their lunch account. And every time, $285 tacked on every time I refill their account. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau says the junk fees could cost families nationwide nearly $100 million a year. And from personal experience, it does add up quick.
Yeah. And I think about people who have four kids,
mm-hmm.
like our executive producer, Kevin McCrory, has four children. And you think about each child loading money on the cards for each individual child. And if you're paying 14%, I mean, that's a lot of money going nowhere. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? Or going to these companies. And in Philadelphia, they get free lunch and free breakfast. But in other places, they don't. And I mean, it just gets really expensive.
It's a hardship. And I think in some school districts, parents can actually take cash or write a check to the school office.
Mm-hmm.
I know I could do that. But
Some places are cashless.
Yeah, who has time to do that?
And if there is no other option but to pay, you end up having to pay.
Yeah.
Speaking of paying, okay, some students in Pennsylvania will get schooled on finance this year, learning basic skills like how to write a check. When did you learn how to write a check?
I don't remember. I want to say it was in my 20s.
I would say in my 20s. Definitely
20s.
Not in high school.
Yeah.
But there's a new law that requires high school students in Pennsylvania to take a personal finance class before graduating. Now, it won't take full effect until 2026, but some schools are already starting it. About half of New Jersey students are already doing this, and experts agree that this is really, really important because so many adults have confusion about how credit works or they have trouble navigating saving and investment. I did not take personal finance in high school, and so when I got to college at BU, I got caught up with the credit cards.
Me too, girl.
You remember that little alley? You go to school, they have all the credit card companies right there.
Oh, yep. And
yeah.
I took full advantage.
Yeah. You said something funny before the show.
Yeah. So
you might not want to disclose, but it is funny. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Oh, yeah. I got the credit card in college. Okay. And I was like, what? I don't have the money, but I can buy these $200 sunglasses now? Bought them. It took me about 20 years to pay off those $200 sunglasses. Okay.
Those interest rates are
real.
Oh,
my gosh. Yes. And I was doing the basic minimum payment every month. Oh, that
and if you knew, if you had taken a personal finance class, you would know not to just do that.
Yes.
The Inquirer has a quiz. We took it. And, you know, I did all right.
You did.
I got a B. If
we were actually doing by percentage, I failed it.
But it just goes to show that this type of education is really needed. And the earlier you get it, the better. And so, yes, talking about early birds. Get the worm. We're going to be talking about job hunting today.
Yes, that is coming up next.
That is the big topic. And, you know, Shirley, you and I talked about the fact that we haven't been in the game and that the game has changed. How did you get some of your first jobs?
Well, we had in television news, there was a very specific job board just for television jobs. And so there was still, like, it was still online, but it was not applying into the void of darkness. You know, you got responses back. And so that's kind of how it worked for me. But, you know, I was mailing out VHS tapes of my work.
And fast forward, when I got my job, it was because I got it from school. I was at Temple getting my master's. And so people connected me to hiring managers. And that's sort of how I got into the job game. But a lot of folks don't have those connections and they are applying online. That's their only connection to a company. And so our big question for today is, what is it like in the job market right now? If you've been looking for a new job, tell us your experience. If you're a hiring manager, we want to hear from you. What makes an application stand out? And what can job seekers do to win you over? Our number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
And so we want to hear how folks are feeling, and we have a voicemail from a caller that we want to share. The caller wanted to remain anonymous, but they're discussing here their experience as a recruiter. Let's take a listen.
A lot of times we'll have people come in wearing inappropriate attire or answering questions shortly or disinterested, almost like they didn't mean to apply. So it was interesting when I heard about fake job postings, because in my experience as a recruiter, I am experiencing fake applicants.
So we're going to talk about ghost jobs, fake job posting, fake applicants. AI.
It's overwhelming.
Yes. So we want to hear your experience. The number again, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Shirley and I will be right back after the break.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
little scene setter there. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Shirley Min. I was waiting for Riri to come on. Okay, we're spending this hour talking about the job market and the job hunt the day after Labor Day. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons is because we keep hearing how tough things are out there.
Yes, and Shirley, a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine told me about how his son, a recent Temple University grad, had applied to dozens of jobs with no luck. He then hired a recruiter and discovered that his son had applied to ghost jobs. If you've never heard of it, ghost jobs are job postings by an employer or a recruiter when they have no intention of filling that job.
I'm shaking my head.
I know. And it got us thinking here at Studio 2 about the modern day job market and hiring in the age of technology. And so what do? When we have questions, we bring in a panel of experts and we do a whole show about it.
I love this. No question unanswered. So our question for listeners today is, do you think the hiring process is broken? And if you're hunting for jobs, we'd love for you to share your experience with us. And then if you're on the employer side of things, what's working for you? What's not? Are you finding good candidates? Call us at 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And we have three guests with us this hour. Lindsay Cameron, professor of management at the Wharton School. Mike Robinson, director of community outreach and hiring at Temple University's LenFest Workforce Initiative, and Kimberly Adams, host and senior Washington correspondent for Marketplace. Welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So I want to start with Kimberly, because I remember a few years ago during the Great Resignation, everybody was leaving their job, getting these new jobs. There were so many open positions. Mm-hmm. But things have seem to have shifted a bit. So I want you to give us a lay of the land. What is the current state of the job market, Kimberly?
Well, we still do have historically low unemployment, but, you know, it's been starting to tick up just a little bit, which is something that the Federal Reserve was looking for as a signal that the economy is cooling down, which is why we're looking to see an interest rate cut likely coming up this month. But in terms of sort of what that feels like for job seekers, one of the other things we are seeing is an uptick in what's called continuing claims for unemployment. So if you look at those weekly unemployment numbers, which are very volatile, but they give us a good indication of a few things, there are more people applying for unemployment insurance for more than 1 week, sometimes a really long time. And those folks are the ones really feeling the effects of these ghost jobs. I talked to a couple of different experts who've been looking at the data behind ghost jobs, and they found that over at resumebuilder.com, they found that 3 in 10 companies currently have fake job postings out there. So that's about 30% of companies. There's another company called Revelio Labs that looks at, you know, sort of the number of actual hires per job posting. And they compared it to, say, back in 2020, where for every 10 job postings, 8 people would get hired. Nowadays, for every 10 job postings, only 4 people are hired.
Whoa. Gosh.
Those numbers are not sounding good. What's the rationale for companies posting these ghost jobs? Mm-hmm. Kimberly?
There's a couple. Yeah, there's a couple. Like, sometimes companies really just do want to see what's out there. They want to build up their pool of applicants and potential applicants so that if they do need to hire, they kind of know what's out there. Some of the other reasons given in some of these surveys is that, you know, they're trying to signal that they are a company that's doing well, and therefore they'll post jobs that maybe they don't intend to fill to make it look like they're in a better financial position to hire than they are. Or if you've got employees in your company complaining about being overworked and stressed out, managers can say, oh, look, we've got a job posted. We just can't find anyone, but we're working on it. We're trying to make it easier. So there are a lot of different things. But, you know, there is some data to indicate that even these companies that have ghost job postings, they are still hiring a bit. Something like 85% of the companies that have ghost job postings, they may not be filling all of those postings, but they are hiring some people.
Well, Mike, Cherry and I have not applied for a job in a minute, yep. Okay? Been a little bit. But what is the modern way of applying? Can you walk us through the process, what it looks like today?
based on research, the number one source of finding a job is networking. Mm. And so work organically with your network. And if you're part of a house of faith, if you're part of a professional affinity group, work organically and build on those connections to build out. And networking will always yield you other contacts, or it will yield you a job. That is the number one source for people finding work. It's networking.
It sounds obvious, but so counter to the tech-driven field.
Yeah, and it's the only way I've gotten a job in the past 15 years is through networks. And by the way, I want to bring in a caller, Michelle, bring her into the conversation. She hires people. Michelle, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I was wanting to know, since COVID, have we seen that the ethic of work employees has changed dramatically? The work ethic used to be before, like, you could be in a job. Like, I've been in my job 16 years, and I would hire someone, and I'll hire five people, and out of those five people, only one would stay.
Huh. Wow.
So don't we think the work ethic has changed dramatically?
Thank you for that, Michelle. You know, Michael, do you have a comment on that?
So one of the things that we see that has become a deficit since COVID, post-COVID, is the interpersonal skills. The lack of interaction, the lack of personal contact has actually caused some, you know, divide in performance and divide in building relationships. Because if you're my supervisor and I was once used to seeing you throughout the week, that was an advantage because you got to see me personally. We had that interaction.
Yeah.
Now there's a lack thereof. And so you're divided, you're separated from decision makers and power brokers, and now you're kind of off on your own island working from home. So that's a huge deficit that I think goes, you know, under the radar that we don't discuss enough. That interpersonal contact is huge.
And Lindsay, we want to bring you into the conversation and talk a little bit about the role of technology in hiring now, because a lot of people, the only interaction they have, I mean, if you're not networked up yet, a lot of young people don't have those big networks, and your only interaction is through an interface. You apply online, maybe you even interview online. What's the role of technology in finding folks for jobs?
Yeah, you know, the research says the people who are going to help you get your job is actually your more extended network. So there's not so much your families. It's like the friend of your cousin is the person that's sort of going to pull you in. So loose ties matter. But you know what my students are telling me in the classroom is that their entire hiring process is already pretty drawn out. You think 6 to 9 interviews. Mm. But the first or second round of interviews after you've made it through the AI and the algorithmic filter is usually with a screen. You know, there are companies out there like HireVue that will funnel questions to you, and then you're being recorded, and you have 2 or 3 times to sort of give your answer back. And what it's doing, hopefully there's somebody who's actually watching that recording, but it's computing a score based on sort of your facial movements, your tics, the tone of your voice, to give you some more sort of assessment of you that then determines whether or not you're going to go to the next level, which could also include more algorithmic and AI-based testing, too. So we're seeing technology well integrated into the hiring process.
Shirley, are you feeling what I'm feeling? Like somebody's recording your face movements and voice tics?
I'm thinking if I had to apply for a job, I'm in trouble. Not, you know, because there's so many things to account for. Plus, with you saying this job search process could take 6 months, maybe even longer. I mean, why is this process taking so long? Because there's just so much information to be taken into account?
It's hard to know. And I just wanted to say one scary thing, too, about the video hirings. You can imagine if you're wearing a hijab or an abaya or glasses or your skin tone, like there are all these different ways discrimination can be baked into the technology. I can't say why the hiring process, though, is getting more and more extended. I just feel like I've been hearing more and more stories from my students that it's taking them longer to sort of land.
Yeah, and David emails, the market is very challenging and at times frustrating. I've been looking for a full-time position for many months. He says, this is a first for me as I have had the good fortune of being recruited for most of my roles. I've had 4 positions pulled back or placed on hold due to uncertain economic conditions. Mm-hmm. So David is really, really feeling it there. And so Kimberly, I mean, you mentioned that some of these numbers are really impacted. When you have folks, if you're looking for a job, I mean, it seems like it takes, you have to plan out that you might not find a job for a year. How does that affect the numbers there? Yeah.
I think, first of all, it affects morale. It makes people really depressed. And my heart goes out to David there. I know it must be a struggle. I spoke to one person who's been applying for jobs for 11 months. He's applied for more than 1,000 positions and not gotten anything. But I want to talk a little bit about what you just mentioned about loyalty and work ethic, like your caller mentioned. I think people forget that very fresh in the minds of young workers is the mass layoffs of the pandemic. Mm. And that so many people went from maybe feeling like they were attached to a company, feeling like they could be loyal to an organization, and then were completely left on their own or lost their jobs and felt just abandoned. And I think we've seen the rise of these things called quiet quitting and, you know, work your wage or things like that, where people are very aware that companies are not loyal to them and therefore they don't need to be loyal to these companies. But, you know, the folks I talked to about the ghost jobs gave some strategies that you can kind of use to identify if a job is real or not, looking at how long the posting has been up, if it's been up a really long time. It may not be a real job. On a platform like LinkedIn, you can see maybe how many people have applied to that job before. If you see that several hundred or several thousand people have applied to a job, but no one's been hired, that may be a sign. And also, if you see a job posted on a job board, but you don't see it on the company website itself, that can be a flag that it's not a real job.
Okay. Well, I want to hear from Susan from Elkins Park, who kind of talks about, I guess, the whole process of job applying for a job. And in this world where you have AI kind of searching through resumes and like weeding people out, it can very, very quickly become so discouraging. But let's listen to Susan from Elkins Park right now.
It is so much harder now. You hear, oh, you should use AI to do your resume, and then you hear that you shouldn't do that because they've got systems out there to check those out, and they don't want you to use AI. It is a long and lonely experience.
That's so sad.
Wow.
So how can you, is there a way where job seekers can guarantee or improve their odds of having a human being look at their resume?
So one of the things that I advise job seekers to do is to really dig deep into that job description, because the job description is going to outline most of the primary duties, not everything, but it's going to outline the primary duties and responsibilities of the job. And so you want to make sure that your resume is reflecting some of those key essentials, and especially if there's a request for a resume and cover letter. Mm-hmm. The cover letter should not parrot everything in your resume. The cover letter should go into more detail. The cover letter should go into more detail, and the resume is kind of like the overview. But a lot of people make the mistake by not tailoring the resume to the job, and a lot of people make the mistake of not using the cover letter to go into greater detail about their accomplishments and how their experience relates to the job. And that's where a lot of things fall flat.
Yeah, and Michael, I have a quick follow-up question to you, because I saw this post on X that sort of fed my curiosity. And this person, Michael Andre Harris, 89, posted, "Since April, I had applied to over 581 jobs, completed 12 multiple rounds of interviews, and received 0 offers. I'm fried." Now, I want to put that out there, because over my 20 plus year career, I've not even applied to 500 jobs all 20 years. Like, so how is it possible that anybody can apply to 500 jobs in just 4 months and end up with these numbers, 0 offers?
If you're just sending out a cookie cutter resume, just one resume to all of those jobs, I can easily see how they're failing, because they're not tailoring the resume for the position. If you're using a generic resume for all of the job opportunities, you're doing yourself a disservice. I do want to address that ghost job situation.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies create these ghost jobs for a purpose, and the purpose is to data mine information of best practices. I want to hear from you what you think can be a vision, a game plan for success for this position. So through those ghost interviews, I get that from you for free. And then I can implement, create better best practices for my own organization. And then also with the ghost job, it's a way that companies brand themselves. They may not have job opportunities, but it's keeping their name out there.
That seems unethical in a way.
It is unethical.
To your point about tailoring the cover letters, too, like, does that mean that a robot is just skimming through the cover letter and saying, oh, this looks more detailed and I'm going to pass this on to a person? Or is it an actual person looking at some of these cover letters?
Most of the time, I see that it's a big AI algorithmic matching on keyword source. It's your first, you know, funnel. And in many ways, companies do that to sort of broaden the funnel. So somebody that's coming from like a non-traditional outlet, maybe an HBCU that's applying for a job, would get seen, or at least seen by the AI filter. What sort of tying back to Michael's great comment about working your network, I would look to see who the hiring manager is from your job. What's the Instagram feed for the company? Are there ways that you can sort of like things and get on their radar? And that way, when your application comes in, you at least have a warm touch to somebody that might be looking out, or you can say, hey, I'm really interested in that job.
Yeah, thank you for that, Lindsay. I want to bring in another caller, Madeline, who is a recruiter. Madeline, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, I just had a quick comment about the HireVue video scheduling. I actually use that for a couple of my roles I'm working on right now. And I think it's a really interesting tool. The purpose of the tool is not, the tool itself doesn't rate candidates. It just allows the recruiter to film the candidate and evaluate the candidate. And the candidate can take that interview at any time in the middle of the night, in the middle of the day, and they don't have to line up schedules with the recruiter in order to get the couple of those screening questions that, you know, are really important for the specific job. I think it's really useful. I like the tool, but it does not replace, for me, the one-to-one interaction with the recruiter. I still talk to all of the candidates that I put through that assessment screening. And I think that, you know, touch base with the candidate is really important, although the tool is helpful to reduce the administrative burden from the recruiter.
Thank you so much, Madeline, for that comment. By the way, if you're listening and you have something you want to say, do you think this hiring process, modern day hiring process, is broken? If you're hunting for jobs, share your experience with us. And if you are on the employer side of things, what is working and what's not? Are you finding good candidates? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org.
Okay, so let's see. I am kind of all over the place here trying to figure out where to go next. Cherry, you know, kind of talked about and read that comment that she had on X about the person applying for 500 plus jobs. And that may not be the best technique, but it is easy to do that with some of these online job boards. And because it's so impersonal, you just think, well, let me just throw this out there and see what sticks. Does that ever work? Like, does it sometimes stick, or is this really just something that's gumming up the works in actually making the process entirely longer?
I think it's all of the above. I want to kind of use a comment earlier to kind of ease into a deeper answer here. You guys were talking about why the interview process has become a little bit more layered post-COVID. It cost about maybe between $10,000 to $20,000 to do a recruitment of some, you know, just one person.
Wow.
And so it's become more layered because of that great exodus of people post-COVID. I want to get it right. If I'm an employer, I want to get it right. So I'm taking the candidate through more challenges in the interview process to make sure that I'm getting the ideal candidate that I know odds-wise may stick longer. So that's why it's a little bit more layered. And the average job search nowadays, to that guy who's frustrated, it takes about 6 months to a year for an average job search to yield production.
So you got to be very patient. And so I want to switch over quickly to the employer side. And I want to tee this part of it up by playing this voicemail from a caller who asked to remain anonymous. The caller talks about their experience as a recruiter.
I work at a pretty well-known retail clothing store. We have found that oftentimes there are what I can only guess are fake applications. An example is I will post a job full-time or leadership, and I might get 20 applicants, And after filtering, I might reach out to 10 or 15. Often only 5 will call me back where I can set up an interview. And once they are set with a time, date, and location, 2 will show up.
Wow. And so, Kimberly Adams, we want to bring you back into this conversation because Michael teed this up a little bit, talking about the cost of bringing someone on. When you hear about fake applications, and I have another example I saw on TikTok. A guy had posted, you know, a resume. He used the fake name Kiss My Nuts, and it was K-N-U-T-S. It was a joke, but he did it. He applied to 10 jobs, 30 interviews.
What?
And he did not show up. And he just wanted to show how bad the algorithm is. Okay? K-N-U-T-S. I'm sorry about that. But so Kimberly Adams, the economy of this, the economics of this, this can get really, really expensive.
It can get really expensive. And I think that it's telling that this caller, the voice memo that you just played, is from someone who works in retail. And I imagine that that person who you saw on TikTok was probably getting callbacks and requests for interview from things in the services sector like retail, like food service, like, you know, some of these lower wage jobs, because that is where we are seeing labor shortages, right? You can probably go to any restaurant in America, any fast food place, any retail store and see help wanted signs still, even though there are lots of people looking for jobs. We've seen mass layoffs in the tech sector, especially as more and more companies are embracing AI. So what we have is a real mismatch from the needs of workers in this economy. We need more home health care workers. We need more people in education, in nursing, and in all of these other fields. But what we have is a lot of tech workers, right, who are looking for jobs. We have a lot of people in customer service, maybe having done phone banks and things like that, who are looking for jobs. These are the jobs that are getting replaced by AI and or are in fields where, as interest rates go up, companies are less free with their spending and free with their hiring, and they are tightening their belts. And so I think you can have sort of both things existing at once, where you have a lot of people who have really good skills that used to work in the economy, but fewer and fewer positions in which to slot them. And so there will be some people who hear about someone who applied for 500 jobs and they're like, well, I see help wanted signs all the time. Go get a job and just do whatever you have to. But if you're somebody who's been, you know, an IT support manager for 15 years, it's going to be hard for you to accept the fact that the only jobs open right now are maybe working in retail or working in food service. And having done both of those jobs myself, I think it would be hard for me to go from the job that I'm in now to those kind of jobs. And, you know, I just, it's a hard time. And I think that there's also with some of the folks who called in and talked about people applying for jobs and not showing up. The reality is there are some services that you get that require you to demonstrate you are actively applying for jobs. Right. Yeah. And going to interviews or even getting interviews. And so there will be some people trying to work the system who will apply for jobs they have no intention of taking just to continue getting those benefits. But I imagine that's a minority of folks.
That is probably a minority. And so we want to hear from you because we're going to go to the next segment and give you some tips because people are finding success. So, yes, what is your experience? You can call us 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And Shirley and I will be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Shirley Minn. We're talking about job hunting and hiring this hour, and we've been hearing from listeners about how difficult things are with more ghost jobs, the widespread use of AI in screening applicants, endless interviews. And we have three guests with us this hour. Lindsay Cameron, professor of management at the Wharton School. Mike Robinson is the director of community outreach and hiring at Temple University's LenFest Workforce Initiative. And Kimberly Adams is the host and senior Washington correspondent for Marketplace.
Yes. And our question for you listeners is this: how are you finding today's job market? How hard has the job search been? And if you're on the hiring side of things, has it gotten tougher to find the right candidate? You can call us. The number is 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. And Shirley and I wanted to kind of change the mood a little bit because some folks are finding success, like this listener, who has been able to find multiple high-paying jobs online. Take a listen.
My name is April McCummins, and I'm from King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. I have used online technology for several positions that I've had over the last 12 years, and three out of the four jobs that I've gained have come through LinkedIn. I've had nothing but great experiences. Were there some jobs that, you know, I didn't hear anything or HR ghosted me? Yes. But for the most part, I have been able to get gainful employment with wonderful salaries from wonderful companies.
Okay. Good for her.
Go, April.
I applaud you, April. You know, Lindsay, let's talk about this. You know, is this a good platform for finding work, or is April sort of an outlier here?
April is an outlier, because I mean, when you think about the job market, there's a higher skilled, higher paid job market and a lower paid job market. So I think people on actually either end of the spectrum tend to benefit well from these types of technology, you know, enhanced employment. You know, if you're a Ruby on Rails programmer, there's a bot on LinkedIn that's looking for your skill sets already that's going to send you targeted ads. You can go from X to Meta to Google and get higher and higher salaries. And if you're at what's considered the lower paid, then you might get, you know, we need so many people to do, you know, home health care work or security jobs. You're going to be interviewed by HireVue. You'll never talk to a person. I've talked to people with security jobs that never talked to a single person when they showed up to that booth that very first day. Entire process remote. I think it's for the people that are in the middle. And the same when we think about how is AI going to change or erode skills, that we've got a lot more questions about.
Wow. And so how do you do this? How do you sort of navigate this AI-intensive world, this technology-heavy world, and become one of the people who are able to find good jobs, decent pay, and still be and get your resume seen? Michael, you help people every day through your work at Temple. How do you do that?
What I'm finding that's really interesting, Philadelphia is like the fifth or sixth largest city in the country, right? And with the job seekers that I'm serving, I'm running into a lot of people, even white-collar workers who aren't tech-savvy. And if you're not tech-savvy, understanding how to use these third-party job boards, AI, and other types of technology that can assist you with your job search, you're locked out of a lot of job opportunities. And you'll be surprised of how huge the digital divide is in big cities like a Philadelphia. And I'm not just talking about folks who, you know, may be on the opposite end of the spectrum, who are, you know, very entry level, who have very basic, you know, job skills. I'm talking about there's a digital divide from that extreme to the next.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to follow up, Mike, but we have a caller on the line. Benjamin is on the job hunt. He is not...
Yeah.
He's having a rough go of it. So, Benjamin, welcome to Studio 2.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to share a quick comment. I'm a career changer. I went to coding school in my late 30s, was hired by a startup 2 years later, laid off on a random Wednesday. Since then, I've been trying to do all the right things. Like Mike, it's been over a year, 1,200 applications. The reality is the energy required to navigate the current interviewing landscape with its successive rounds of assessments, on-sites, behavioral interviews is immense and lengthy. And it feels more like less of a measure of one's ability and more like an endurance test. It's just kind of odd because I got a lot more traction having zero experience as an engineer than I do now having 2.5 years. So yes, I would say the hiring process is broken. And thanks for taking my call.
Thank you so much, Benjamin, for that 1,200 job applications. I know there's a lot of frustration there. Michael, any comments in response to what Benjamin has been going through?
He mentioned something that's very, near and dear to my heart, behavioral-based interviews. That's a form of interviewing where they ask certain questions to cue on certain categories that they're looking for a candidate to be experienced in, where it used past behavior and successes as a predictor for future performance. And the best way to deal with behavioral-based interviews, because that's what most HR people are using these days, is the STAR method. And you want to answer the question where you're talking about your situation in the problem solving. You want to talk about the task that you handle. You want to talk about, your achievements, and then you want to talk about your results. That's the STAR response method to behavioral-based interviews. But if you don't know that STAR methodology of how to respond to behavioral-based interviews, you'll fall flat quick in an interview.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So in Benjamin's case, he has a skill set. Could some of the skills he's had, 1,200 applications, clearly he's hitting a wall here. Is there some way that some of the skills he possesses can be transferred to something else? Or should job seekers be maybe shifting their focus to another field but that can capitalize on the skills they already have? Even if it's just temporary?
I think that's a hard one to answer. I'm thinking about when there was a lot of manufacturing and assembly, car assembly plants that were sort of shutting down in the Midwest. And they brought in a great HR consulting firm to help people figure out what they were going to do next. And they actually found there's a lot of overlap between folks who work on assembly line, sort of putting the nuts and bolts on windshields, and dental hygienists. So they paid for people to do a 9-12 month training program to sort of transfer into this new skill. But it actually, when you think about the typical person who would work on an assembly line compared to who your dental hygienist is, that's actually a pretty big difference, I think, in sort of going from office environments, who your colleagues are going to be. So somehow thinking about how does skill transference actually look in the real time, I think is a lot more messy. And I think that with AI and the rise of algorithmic management, there's going to be a whole generation of people that might almost get sort of left behind because the technology will change so quickly. The person who was putting shoes on the horses didn't automatically become the car mechanic, 6 months or 2 years later. There was a whole generation of skills that these people sort of had to struggle, and it was for the new generation.
Yeah, I want to read in a couple of comments from our listeners. We have Brianna who emails, I had an experience when I was in between tech company jobs and had applied to several local jobs in the service sector at Trader Joe's, Target, whatever, as a holdover. She says, I was rejected and told personally by one of the managers that they wouldn't be able to hire me because they felt as though I was going to leave in a few months. So that is a reason why she couldn't get a job. Ellen emails, most companies are required to interview some internal candidates and some external applicants. They usually go with the internal one since it's less expensive and easier, even though the external applicant may be the better choice. Kimberly Adams from Marketplace, I know you've talked about this ghost jobs. Is that part of it as well? Because is there talent fishing going on there as well when folks are applying to these jobs that a lot of times they may, even if they're the best candidate, they might not get chosen?
Right. I think it is lower cost for employers to hire within their own companies or promote within their own companies. That can also boost internal morale if people see someone within their own company rising through the ranks. But sometimes they are required for one reason or another to post a job publicly, before making that hire. Or, it can also be a tactic to help them negotiate with their internal candidate. So there are a lot of ways that this can manifest, you know, in terms of translating into who gets what jobs. But I think, you know, just listening to some of the comments and hearing from folks here and elsewhere who've been applying for so many jobs and getting discouraged, I think what it reminds me personally of is the importance of, you know, making sure you are putting, you know, some money away for a rainy day if you can save a little bit so that you can tide yourself over if you do end up losing a job, because that job mm-hmm. search is going to take a long time. Making sure you're using the time while you are employed yeah. to be building your skills so that if something happens, you have some documented transferable skills that can help you in that next job search. I mean, and then of course there's stuff like social media. As much as companies are doing these behavioral tests and using AI, they're also looking at your social media and all of mm-hmm. your accounts. So yeah. don't get yourself in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, think carefully yeah. about what you're posting or make those accounts private, because that'll get you.
Thanks, Kimberly. We want to kind of hear some sound now. It's a voicemail from Bill. And we had talked about the value of networking mm-hmm. earlier on in the show. So this voicemail from Bill, he is a leadership and transition coach. And he talks about how employers and potential employees connect and sort of the value of networking. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Bill from the Philadelphia area. One of the most significant changes is how the job seeker now networks. Prior to the pandemic, networking was done almost exclusively in person. And today, job seekers need to be really, really good at networking virtually.
Okay, I love that. So let's talk about some of these tips for success, networking being one of them, and networking virtually. So what does that mean?
Yeah, Michael.
How
Lindsay?
To connect?
I would highly recommend that people at the very least become card-carrying members of their professional affinity mm-hmm. group. So, for instance, if I'm an engineer, maybe I'm a part of the National Society of Black Engineers, or if I'm an accountant, I'm a part of my professional accounting society. When I worked at Deloitte as the recruiting manager here in yeah. Philadelphia, one of the things that we coveted were individuals that were part of their professional affinity group yeah. because you're rubbing elbows with decision makers. And so that's a way to build on your organic networking with people who are in the know, people who are in positions of hiring, the gatekeepers, if you will. And then also another way to network is to be a part of these job clubs that exist around the city. Job clubs are people who are job seekers at all levels who come together to be supportive of one another in their job search efforts. They bring in employers, they help one another with job referrals, and they do things like, you know, resume assessments and mock interviews and things like that. And they have clubs located all over the place. And these are networking opportunities where people can be a part of an organic, you know, fellowship of people that are in it for the same reason, to find a job and to be supported.
And I want to, Lindsay, kick it over to you and sort of follow up on Shirley's question, because people have used LinkedIn. There's other apps that allow you to do some of this networking virtually. Any suggestions on how to effectively use some of these tools that we have?
I love when people make a presence for themselves, whether it's on Twitter. You know, Michael's over here pointing at me. Mm-hmm. Twitter, X, LinkedIn, when you could just see people's thought leadership on mm-hmm. Medium. I mean, that's one of the great things I think we're seeing about technologies. There's a more democratization of how people can share ideas. You can get known for an idea, a product, a brand. I've seen people who go to coding school, like one of the prior call-in guests mentioned, and they do website projects for their favorite NGO or their friends, you know, church or things like that. So again, these places that put you into sort of different communities.
Yeah. And as we get ready to wrap up, Kimberly Adams, I know you watch the market and the industry. What do you think that the future of the job hunt and hiring will look like as we move forward?
I'm inclined to agree with Lindsay that we are entering an area, a future of real instability as we continue to see how AI is going to affect the job market. And there are going to be some sectors of the economy that don't exist on the other side of this. And the folks who are in those sectors of the economy need to be particularly mindful and keep upskilling and you know, think about what the hard pivot might need to be in case those jobs just don't come back, in case that they are applying for 1,200 jobs because those jobs aren't real anymore. And so I think it's a hard reality. And I have to imagine it was hard for, you know, the manufacturing jobs that were lost, you know, in the 90s and things like that. It's sometimes hard to adjust to the new realities of the job market. But look, we're in journalism. We know this very well. You either pivot sometimes or you don't survive.
Lindsay?
Yeah. And one thing earlier we had talked about how sometimes companies are using information from these ghost interviews and ghost jobs to help the company. I mean, there are ways where you've seen Netflix and other companies actually do contests. You know, Top Coder has a ton of these where a bunch of people come together and one of Netflix's compression algorithms was actually written in a contest. And so when we're talking about, and those have cash prizes. But when you're thinking about how to build a community online, there's individual ways you can do it through your thought leadership and what you're going to post on Medium, but there's a way to get together a group of 3 to 4 people. Maybe they're folks you meet at this job club, and there's a project you're going to do together. You know, I have a friend who spent time at home taking care of her children, and then decided with one of her other stay-at-home mom's friends to do a series of children's storybooks and, you know, self-published them and then sort of built a new career out of that.
Yeah, and we'll leave it there, but it sounds like you have to get creative. You have to stay positive. You can't give up.
Right. As frustrating and discouraging as it can be, you just have to keep on keeping on.
Exactly. So thank you so much, Lindsay Cameron, Mike Robinson, and Kimberly Adams, for being on this episode of Studio 2.
Yep. That is it, though, for today's edition of Studio 2. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Al Banks is our engineer. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Shirley Minn.
Shirley, I loved spending today with you the day after Labor Day.
Thank you for having me. It's always so much fun filling in.
Yes, and I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining us. And to everybody who called in and gave comments, we appreciate you.